It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. A recently released Harvard study found that large-scale wind turbine operations can temporarily affect the local temperature and climate. We explore the impact of wind farms with the study's author, compare and contrast this temperature change with the climate change issue, and discover what this research means for the future of energy. What questions do you have about the impact of wind farms? Do you have a wind farm in your community, and what's that experience been like for you? How do you think we should power the next generation of Americans? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lee Miller is a postdoctoral research fellow at the Harvard John A. Paulson School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. He studies large-scale wind power, its ability to generate electricity, and the associated climate differences large-scale wind farms may also introduce. Lee Miller, welcome to the Morning Show.
Thank you.
So let's talk about your findings. How are wind farms connected to temperature change?
Well, at night, when kind of the, let's say, the air near the surface and the air aloft, aloft being maybe 200 meters, isn't well mixed. And in a very simple way, wind turbines, just like a fan, introduce mixing, adds that air mixing in between those two layers, and you get a surface temperature increase in response.
So why wouldn't this happen if there were just normal breezes occurring? Or would it?
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, that's a great question. So during the day, say typical breezes, you get a lot of solar heating of the ground surface, and it drives convection from the bottom up, just like, let's say, a pot of hot water on the stove. At night, you don't have that solar heating of the surface. So now that warm air is allowed to rise and bifurcate from the surface air. And the absence of that mixing results in air aloft being warmer, air near the surface being cooler. So it's kind of a different set of effects related to the breeze example.
So how much temperature change are we talking about here, and what how big an area related to wind farms is affected?
So certainly it's different, you know, day to day, season to season. But in a broad sense, I'd say talking in Fahrenheit, 1.5-2 degrees Fahrenheit in a local region. And the response to the area question you asked, it seems to scale with the scale of the wind farm. So as we get kind of more serious about addressing our energy demands with renewables, we need larger wind farms, and this temperature response would accompany that larger scale.
And is this temperature change happening as long as these turbines are spinning, or is this does it stay changed once it's changed?
It would certainly be that this warming effect would disappear if you would kind of remove your wind turbines, certainly.
Okay. So what if they're there and there's not enough air moving to turn them? Then do we not get the temperature change?
That would be my guess, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking, what, 1 to 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit of temperature change. Talk about what impact this has on the local region, the neighborhood of the wind turbine farm.
Well, I explored it from a quantitative perspective, but I'm not a soil moisture plant specialist. I know that you're going to have, you know, from a growing degree days or growing season length, that because you're warming your nighttime temperatures, you'd have a less incidence of frost. Like your growing season length will increase slightly. That sounds like a good thing to me, not knowing a great deal about it. I also know that that very cold freeze in the wintertime is important for killing pests, like your insect infestation that's buried in the near the surface in the soil. So those warmer conditions may not be good for killing pests. I don't think we know enough to really say, but it's worth really looking at as we get more serious about wind.
So we have there are a lot of questions for researchers to ask and hopefully answer regarding the effects of this temperature change then.
Yeah, I would hope so. Yes. Yes.
Lee Miller is a postdoctoral research fellow at the Harvard John A. Paulson School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. He studies large-scale wind power, its ability to generate electricity, and the associated climate differences large-scale wind farms may also introduce. So let's compare, contrast this kind of temperature change from the general climate warming that we've experienced from the use of fossil fuels. And this is something people are more familiar with. Let's compare these two things. How are they similar? How are they different?
Okay. Well, when we think about climate change, at least I think about climate change, it's a global effect in response to greenhouse gas concentrations increasing in response to your fossil fuel emissions. So, you know, a point source location emitting carbon dioxide gets distributed globally, right, and has a global effect. This would kind of be the reverse, where in part we're deploying wind power so that we reduce our emissions, reduce that trajectory of increased concentrations and reduce the effects of global scale climate change. The counter to that, though, would be if we're simply worried about temperature response in a local way, that we need to accept that we're going to get these nighttime warmer conditions in response to having the wind farm operational. So completely different, you know, that the warming that you see from a wind farm is not related to the physics of a kind of climate change or greenhouse gas emissions. It's simply due to this mixing.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what your concern is. Yeah.
So is this enough to make people say, hey, maybe we should rethink wind, or is it not that big a deal?
I think that it's good to say that all large-scale energy sources have some sort of climatic impacts, wind being one example. Solar would be another example. And if we go in with part of that expectation, we won't be so surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could be a pretty big deal given the overlap of specifically in the U.S. of, say, windy regions and our primary agricultural regions. But I think, again, I'm not the agricultural specialist, and, you know,
sure,
more observations and more understanding would really help here.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'd like you to talk a little bit about the future research you're hoping to do on this topic.
Okay. Sure. So I would be concerned about soil moisture differences, where in part this mixing of air seems to also, it's been observed to increase evaporation rates at night, and lots of irrigation occurs at night. So that has me a little cautious. I'd want to understand that better. I'd also want to just kind of understand, I think having done the whole study, I have some ideas on how to lessen the effects, mainly by packing the turbines together in a way that's not currently done. But it's a big Pandora's box that just exploded. And, yeah, I mean, related to energy demand and what are the local and global scale climatic effects,
okay,
and how much emissions do they reduce by powering them.
Lots and lots of questions for you to work on there. Lee Miller, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Sure. Yep.
Lee Miller is a postdoctoral research fellow at the Harvard John A. Paulson School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. He studies large-scale wind power, its ability to generate electricity, and the associated climate differences large-scale wind farms may also introduce. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We're regularly encouraged to get out the vote. But for some, it's harder than it sounds. The law requires that polling places be accessible to individuals with disabilities, but that isn't always the case. On top of that, transportation, photo ID, and lack of education for poll workers can all become barriers to voting for a citizen with a disability. We're going to talk about the many challenges the disability community faces while exercising their civic duty and where they can go for help. Do you have a disability? What has your experience at the polls been? Have you faced some challenges? What accommodations are needed in order to ensure that you can vote? What political issues are important to you as a citizen with a disability? And what questions do you have about resources for voters? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Barbara Beckert is the Milwaukee Office Director for Disability Rights Wisconsin, the protection and advocacy system for Wisconsinites with disabilities. She also serves as the coordinator for DRW's Help America Vote Act program and staffs the Wisconsin Disability Vote Coalition, a program of DRW and the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. Barbara, welcome to the morning show.
Thank you. Good morning.
So let's talk about some of the barriers to the disabled community when they attempt to exercise their civic duty and cast a ballot. How has transportation become a barrier, for example?
Yes, well, thank you for that question. Many people with disabilities do not drive, either because of their disability or because they may be low income, and that can be a barrier in terms of access to voting in Wisconsin. It can also be a barrier to getting a photo ID. Again, that's become a requirement in the state of Wisconsin for voting, and because so many people with disabilities do not have a driver's license, that can also lead to disenfranchisement at the polls.
So how do poll workers present a barrier to voters with disabilities?
I think one thing that's important is to have more education of poll workers about what their requirements are, the legal requirements are to ensure that there's accessibility at the polls. For example, I recently had an experience with voting. Each polling place is required to have an accessible voting machine. That's the law based on the Help America Vote Act. When I went to my polling place, I found that the poll workers were not aware of this requirement. They didn't know that there was an accessible voting machine. I've talked to other individuals and helped file complaints where they went to their polling place and an accessible voting machine was not available. So that's one area. I think also understanding some of the other aspects of accommodations that people with disabilities are entitled to is important in terms of education of poll workers. So some of those might include the right to have someone assist them with voting, the responsibility to provide curbside voting, ensure that that is available if a voter with a disability cannot enter the polling place. Of course, we hope that our polling places are accessible and that that's not an issue, but unfortunately that's not the case in every polling place. Well, another opportunity is to ensure that more people with disabilities are trained as poll workers. I think that's one of the most promising options.
Well, a lot of polling places are in county or municipal buildings, which should already be accessible, but some are in other types of buildings, which may not be. And so there's probably, I would guess, across the state, some inconsistency here. Do you have an idea of where we have more problems? Is it in cities? Is it in rural areas? Where do we see the most issues here?
That's a great question. Disability Rights Wisconsin works with the Wisconsin Election Commission to address accessibility in the polling places. And on major elections, including the one on November 6th, we actually will be going out, having trained members of our staff, along with the Wisconsin Election Commission and their staff, going to audit polling places across the state. So I'd love to come back and talk with you afterwards and share what we've learned. I think historically that there may be additional barriers in rural areas voters may have a longer travel time to get to the polling place, and there may be greater concerns about accessibility there. But honestly, we do see problems across the board.
Well, let's hear from some citizens with disabilities in northern Wisconsin and the challenges they face. This was put together as part of WPR's Beyond the Ballot Project by reporter Danielle Kading and features Rich Skirbitz, John Nusain, and Steve Carlson talking about what they'd like to see addressed this election season.
Rich, are you going to vote in this election this fall, and why?
I am going to vote in this election, and this is one of the most important things that we do as citizens.
Can you tell us why it's important for people with disabilities in particular to vote?
There's a lot of issues that reflect and affect people with disabilities. And some of the examples that affect people with disabilities are public transportation, personal care assistance, and accessibility in general, employment opportunities, health coverage, and benefits for people with disabilities. What's the single most important issue to you in this election?
Well, there's a lot of them, so it's hard to say the single most important one, but transportation. Transportation in northwestern Wisconsin is a really tough nut to crack. There's very few places that have public transportation. Superior is one that does have mainline and paratransit. Anybody else in Douglas County is going to have a really hard time finding a ride. All the public kind of transportation that we can get will benefit all our citizens, but in particular people with disabilities. What would you say is an important issue in this election season?
The Medicaid expansion. That's been a big stumbling block here in Wisconsin. It has not only affected people with disabilities in terms of an inability to expand a program crucial to keeping folks with disabilities independent in the community, but the lack of the expansion has contributed to higher premiums for people buying policies on the open exchange. How do you think things have changed related to disability issues over time in the political arena?
I cut my teeth on disability rights with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And ever since that time, I think it put the issues of disability rights out there in front of everybody. It was a wake-up call to America, in my opinion, that we have to consider the concerns of people with disabilities. Before that, it was really tough to get anybody to really care. You know, if it doesn't affect them, and I'm the same way. I mean, it's human nature. I was not affected by any disability stuff until something happened to me. You know, I'm a single leg amputee. I was injured in a construction accident when I was 24. And when I woke up in the hospital, I had some questions about, am I going to be able to do the stuff? A year later, that was not the biggest concern I had in my life, and it isn't today. So that disability experience teaches us that, you know, this is just a naturally occurring thing. It's always going to be with us. It's always going to be with society. It's certainly nothing to be feared.
There is a very fine line between people with disabilities and people in general. We're people first. And it really is true that sooner or later, everybody's going to have a disability. You might going to lose your hearing. It's going to be harder to walk around. You might end up in a wheelchair with a cane. Disability issues are people issues.
I feel the root of all barriers is that stigma attached to disability. It sounds like a simplistic answer, but I think if we get past that we can be inclusive and more inclusive to people.
Barbara, respond to what we heard. I mean, there was a lot there, but give us your take on what we just listened to.
Yeah, well, first of all, kudos to our speakers. I think they had a very important message, and that is that any one of us is likely to develop a disability in our lifetime. It's the only minority group that any one of us might join at any time, and I think that's why we all have a stake in ensuring that there is equal access to voting for voters with disabilities.
So these voters were talking about conditions in northern Wisconsin. Let's talk about the unique challenges that rural voters face.
Well, I think the comments about transportation are particularly relevant. There can be a long distance to travel to the polling place, and there is not the same access to public transportation that we have in some of the more urban areas of our state. And that further reinforces why it's so important for people with disabilities and their family members and others who care about access to voting rights and to all of the services in our community to get involved, because the choices that people make at the ballot box have a direct impact on future access to transportation. Our policymakers will be making important decisions about policies that have an impact on those issues and that have the ability to transform the independence of people with disabilities.
Barbara Beckert is the Milwaukee Office Director for Disability Rights Wisconsin and also serves as the coordinator for the Help America Vote Act program. Do you have a disability? What has your experience been at the polls? Have you faced some challenges? What accommodations are needed in order to ensure that you can vote? What questions do you have about resources for voters with disabilities? Let us know at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We're having a conversation about barriers to voting for individuals with disabilities. Do you have a disability? What has your experience been at the polls? And what kinds of challenges have you faced? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Barbara Beckert is the Milwaukee Office Director for Disability Rights Wisconsin, the protection and advocacy system for Wisconsinites with disabilities. She also serves as the coordinator for DRW's Help America Vote Act program. Barbara, all Americans have a right to vote. How important is that? Is it that everyone is able to vote privately and independently at their polling place on Election Day?
Yeah, I think the ability to vote privately and independently is a basic civil right. And I think that currently we do not have equal access afforded to people with disabilities. So we all benefit if people with disabilities have the ability to exercise and assert their right to vote at the polls and ensure their access to our democratic process.
Do you hear from a lot of people with disabilities that they just don't vote because of these challenges?
We actually hear a variety of reasons why people do not vote. And certainly one concern is lack of accessibility. Transportation is also a significant concern. We are actively engaged through the Wisconsin Disability Vote Coalition in providing training and education so voters better understand their rights. And we recently released a video, Know Your Rights, with the hope of ensuring that more voters with disabilities are aware of the fact that they have the right to an accessible polling place, to an accessible voting machine, to curbside voting, and to have assistance from someone of their choice if they so choose.
Do we have any idea how many voters are involved here? I mean, how many? How large is the community of the disabled here in Wisconsin?
Well, I think that we have seen on a national level that participation of voters with disabilities includes approximately 16 million people. That was based on participation of voters with disabilities in the November 2016 elections. In terms of participation of voters in Wisconsin, there actually is some analysis that was done by Rutgers University on a per state basis that looked at participation of voters with disabilities in each state. And in Wisconsin, they identified a gap of approximately 8%. So voters with disabilities are participating at a lower rate than other voters in our state, and we believe that the reasons for that are the accessibility issues and other barriers.
Elizabeth from Platteville called to ask, can people vote by mail if they have disabilities?
Yes, that's a great question. So all voters have the ability to vote absentee, and that is something that Wisconsin has been very progressive on in terms of providing the opportunity for any voter to complete an absentee ballot. So that's something that we encourage. If a voter does not have the ability to access the internet and download a ballot online, they can call their municipal clerk. Unfortunately, many people aren't aware of the opportunity to vote absentee. And in addition to that, a lot of people feel that they want to have the same right as other voters do to vote at their polling place on election day.
Let's hear another story. Denise Jess is the CEO and Executive Director of the Wisconsin Council for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Denise is legally blind and has been since birth. She shared her voting experiences with us yesterday.
I have had some difficulty casting a ballot. I am really fortunate to live in the city of Madison, so I want to name that, and I want to applaud the efforts of our city clerk and poll workers to create accessibility. And even under those circumstances, and in years past, before there was a stronger emphasis on access in the city of Madison, I had a number of issues. The challenge for me in voting has always been having an accessible ballot. There are accessible voting machines. Prior to the city of Madison having better technology, there was a machine called the AutoMark. And when I would get to my polling place, I would have to work through my own feelings of not wanting to stand out or feel different or feel less than by having to ask to use that piece of equipment. And that piece of equipment in many polling places is often kind of shoved to the back of the polling place. Used to be the AutoMark was about an 800-pound gorilla, so it took up a lot of space. It was noticeable. You clearly stood out as different if you were using that piece of equipment versus one of the carrels that are there for voters to fill out their ballot. It often didn't work. The ink cartridges dry out in them, so you know you go through the whole procedure of using it, and then your ballot doesn't print. So you're kind of back at square one, and then do you decide, gosh, I'll just live with filling out a paper ballot. Seeing the paper ballot is always very difficult for me. I'm able to do it with a lot of effort. So I always, if I filled out a paper ballot versus using the AutoMark, I had to bring a magnifying glass, and I would always let poll workers know that I had it because I didn't want them to think I was doing something weird, you know, at the when I was filling out my ballot. And it would always take me longer because, you know, there's only a certain amount of the ballot you can see when you use a really strong magnifying glass. Or my other option was to ask my spouse to complete the ballot with me. And while my spouse is always very willing to do that and very generous about it, and I trust this person to enter my information accurately, there's still something uncomfortable about having someone else complete your ballot. And other voters are noticing that. You know, it's like, why is that person doing this person's ballot? So there's just a lot of discomfort and never quick. You know, I'd watch other voters come in and get, you know, the two or three people would vote in the time that it would take me to vote. So I always needed to build in time for being able to complete my ballot and not feeling rushed through it.
Barbara, comment on what you just heard from Denise.
Yeah, well, Thank you, Denise, for such an important commentary on voting rights. I think it's important for everyone to understand that this is actually the law. It's not just something that's nice to do. The Help America Vote Act states that casting a ballot needs to be accessible for individuals with disabilities, including non-visual accessibility for the blind and visually impaired, in a manner that provides the same opportunity for access and participation as for other voters. So while some good progress has been made, as Denise points out, we have a long way to go in ensuring that voters with disabilities are aware of their rights, that poll workers are sufficiently trained, and that the technology is both available and in good working order. That's not always the case. So we've got some good work to do together.
Yeah, what about, Denise was talking about, you know, the need not to have these things kind of be shoved off into a dark corner or be made to feel different or somehow impeding the voting process for others. The way she was made to feel at the polling place, talk about what that's like.
Yeah, I really think that a best practice is if poll workers ask every voter when they come to the polling place, would you like to have a paper ballot or use the accessible voting machine? That way, everyone is informed of this, right? And I've heard from a lot of people that they've really appreciated that. I've talked to a voter who is not visually impaired, but without her reading glasses has difficulty reading the ballot. So she was really appreciative of the opportunity to use the accessible voting machine. It's a technology that many people can benefit from. So I think that that's a best practice for our poll workers.
What accommodations specifically are available to voters with visual or hearing impairments? We haven't talked about the hearing impaired yet either.
Well, I think that there are several different accommodations that are available. First of all, the voting machine, because of the fact that it provides the detailed information on the screen, is something that is beneficial to many voters who have a hearing impairment. In addition to that, as we've mentioned, a voter has the opportunity, if they wish, to ask someone to assist them. So those are probably the most important accommodations.
Barbara Benkert is the Milwaukee Office Director for Disability Rights Wisconsin. She also serves as the coordinator for the Help America Vote Act program. And when we come back, we will talk about the Help America Vote Act program and how that plays into this discussion. Do you have a disability? What has your experience been at the polls? What questions do you have about resources for voters with disabilities? What political issues are important to you as a citizen with a disability? We heard some of those earlier in the hour. What are yours? Are you a poll worker? Do you know what to do to properly assist voters with disabilities? Lots of questions. We'll hopefully have the answers here on the morning show. Join us at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email address is ideas@wpr.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We're talking about obstacles and challenges to casting a ballot for citizens with disabilities in Wisconsin. The law requires that polling places be accessible, but that isn't always the case. And as we're learning, there are other obstacles. Do you have a disability? What has your experience been at the polls? Are you a poll worker? Do you know what to do to properly assist voters with disabilities? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. ideas@wpr.org. Or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guest this hour, Barbara Benkert, Milwaukee Office Director for Disability Rights Wisconsin. Barbara, tell us about the Help America Vote Act and how that works to help ensure the rights of voters with disabilities.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to address that. The Help America Vote Act was really an important milestone in terms of ensuring access to the polling place for voters with disabilities and advancing this important civil right. It was the first time that federal legislation specifically guaranteed a private and independent ballot for people with disabilities. As part of the Help America Vote Act, protection and advocacy agencies in each state, like DRW, receive funding to provide education, training, and assistance to individuals with disabilities to promote their full participation in the electoral process. That includes registering to vote, casting a ballot, and accessing polling places. The Wisconsin Election Commission also receives funding with the goal of ensuring and enforcing accessibility at polling places across the state.
Well, let's talk about where people can go if they need some help. You have a hotline, and let us have that, to give us that number, and we will repeat it before the end of the hour.
Yeah, thanks for the chance to share this resource. Disability Rights Wisconsin does have a voter hotline. Toll-free, our number is 1-844-DIS-VOTE, and we are a resource for disability-related questions about voting, including voting rights, help addressing a concern, or filing a complaint. One thing that we find is voters may have an issue or concern at the polls, and then they don't really follow up on it. And it's important that these be documented and that a complaint be filed. Unless the Wisconsin Election Commission knows about these concerns, they're not able to address them. And they're also an important resource to contact for voters who have a question or concern.
Let's hear from Denise Jess again, a Madison citizen who is blind. She shared with us what she called the attitudinal barriers to voting.
There are many issues for disabled voters in general. I think one piece that is universal for many of us, not only are the physical barriers that we experience, there's also the attitudinal barriers. And I'm really grateful to poll workers because many of them volunteer their time. They give up their work day to be there, or their elders in our community who really believe in voting. So I'm grateful to them. And at the same time, I acknowledge that they are ordinary citizens. So our citizenry as a general whole has discomfort with disabilities. So of course we're going to face that when we get to the polls. So case in point, just very recently, like an election or two ago, when I came in to vote, the poll and needed to sign the poll book, the poll worker said, I said, where do I need to sign? Can you just place the pen in the right box? And the poll worker said, that's okay, honey. You can just put an X. And since I'm not this person's honey, I don't really like to be called honey. and putting the X, which is legal, to me diminished my experience. It was, I'd like to sign my name. I have a lot of pride in my heritage. I want my name to be registered in that poll book, not the letter X. Voters with disabilities have similar stories, things like when they go to use the accessible equipment, hearing comments like, well, nobody ever uses that piece of equipment. Well, the person who's asking to use it is a somebody. So hearing nobody ever uses it gives the message that somehow the person asking is a nobody. Things like where's the accessible equipment placed? Is it hold equal and important status with everything else? If a voter with a disability needs to have curbside voting, do the poll workers, no matter the weather, come out cheerfully, or do they come out like, oh dear, we have to go out in the snow and take this person a ballot? All of those things about how we're treated will be remembered maybe even more profoundly than the experience of managing the equipment.
Denise mentioned how it can feel embarrassing to need assistance to vote, or that you can feel like a burden. Barbara, how common is that experience?
Yeah, I think it's not uncommon. I want to join Denise, first of all, in recognizing poll workers. They volunteer, they give of their time, and that's so important. But I think her comments really point out that we have a long way to go in terms of ensuring true equity and respect for voters with disabilities. And we want to be part of the solution. At the Wisconsin Disability Vote Coalition and DRW, we are eager to be a resource in terms of advancing recommendations for improving training for poll workers, and also looking at an initiative to ensure that more poll workers with disabilities are hired. I think that's one of the ways to really transform and improve our system.
Again, the number for the hotline is 844-347-8683, and we do have that posted. We've tweeted it out, and it is available on or will be shortly on our website, as well as links to the Disability Rights Wisconsin website and the Wisconsin Disability Vote Coalition at WPR.org. Let's talk more broadly about the disability community's participation in politics. And we heard earlier, the clip we played earlier talked about what issues are important. Let's talk about those issues again. What are the issues that are important to the disabled community in this election?
We are at a very important time, I think, in terms of the future of some of the critical services that are vital to the independence of people with disabilities. Over the past year or so, we've seen a lot of public dialogue about the future of Medicaid and of the Affordable Care Act. For so many people with disabilities, access to health care insurance, including the range of long-term supports that are provided by Medicaid, is critical to their ability to live as independently as possible in the community and be contributing members of our state. So there's a great deal that's on the line. So I would put Medicaid and access to health care and the Affordable Care Act at the very top of the list. We hear from so many individuals their concern that the access they currently have may be limited in the future. Transportation, we've talked about quite a bit today. That's another area where people are not able to fully contribute to the community, to pursue employment, possibly not able to vote because of lack of access to accessible and affordable transportation.
What's your sense of the effort that the state of Wisconsin is making in some of these areas to help people who have disabilities cast their ballot?
We are pleased to serve on the Wisconsin Election Accessibility Advisory Committee, and they have been a tremendous partner. We have been doing trainings around the state for voters with disabilities, and the Wisconsin Election Commission has been there with us every step of the way with providing resource material for trainings, partnering with us on the Know Your Rights video, helping us to have opportunities to get accessible voting machines out into the community. And we really need to have that education, not only for poll workers, but for voters with disabilities. In addition to that, we'll be partnering with the Election Commission on accessibility audits. So those are all very positive things, but clearly there's the potential to do more, and that's a question of resources that we would like our policymakers to prioritize.
Okay. Barbara Beckert, Milwaukee Office Director for Disability Rights Wisconsin, thank you for joining us this morning, Barbara.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, and we encourage everyone to turn out and vote on November 6th.
I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.